Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
You want a podcast? Great. So you have some audio on your website that nobody goes to.
You're listening to Vandal Tron's Curious World Podcast. Sit back and relax. Everything's going to be cool.
I think sometimes life gets the hold of us. You know, we go on and we kind of get wrapped up. You know, people used to always complain about Peter Gabriel of, you know, fuck, man, why does this guy take, 12 years between albums? Well, what's the alternative? You know, be like Kiss and just crank out album, like one a year or two a year. Do you remember those albums? I mean, if you do, I feel sorry for you. You know, when I was an actor, and I can say I'm not anymore, but actor, artist, whatever you want to call it, I defined myself from my output. Booking a gig or writing something, like, that was it, and I felt a sense of accomplishment, and I felt good. But what if I take that away? You know, because essentially nobody cares. But on the flip side, if you fuck up, nobody cares either. So what are you left with? You're left with yourself. And who are you? And that's the real journey. Because I think the point that we need to focus in on is, it's okay. It's okay to fall on your ass. Just get embarrassed. Get embarrassed and move on. You know, whether it's music or writing or making money for a client or whatever it is that you do, you find that it's incredibly important. It's also something to do, just you pull from the air, right? So you put numbers on a spreadsheet, you make a song. It's just something that you pull from the air. You may think it's great. You may think it sucks. You just don't want to be late to your own experience. Benjamin Franklin has this great quote, "Tell me and I forget, teach me and I remember, involve me and I learn." So what are we learning? That's the challenge for me. I'm always trying to learn, even in uncomfortable, especially in uncomfortable situations, but in situations where I feel like there is nothing to learn, that's where you have to learn. That's where you have to open up your mind and your heart. I don't know how frequent or infrequent these shows will be. I'm living my life. I'm trying to evolve and grow. I still find this incredibly rewarding and fun. But if you're with me on my journey, you'll understand that this is something I do with the air. And you listening, that's something too that you do with the air. It's rewarding for me, and I love it. And there were times where I could have had sponsors, and I did have sponsors, and I said no thank you, because I want to do this on my time, and I want you to listen on your time. We're all on this journey together. Sometimes we'll get off on an exit. Sometimes we'll be stuck in traffic. But we have to be learning and growing and evolving and sharing. So I do the best I can. You know, this is just a tiny little rinky-dink podcast that sometimes I have guests and sometimes I talk into a microphone in an empty room with my cat staring at me. But we're learning. And if you're out there, you're listening, I'm so grateful for you for listening and being on this ride. And sometimes you'll get off too, but I hope that you'll get back on. And if you leave forever, that's okay too. You're not beholden to me. I want you to be here because you should be here and because you find something interesting, potentially rewarding. That's what it's really all about. So that kind of explains some of my absences. You know, I didn't fall off the a tree or didn't break my neck. I just kind of been living life and trying to learn and grow in different ways. My guest today is a young man who is doing just that. It's a great conversation. Can't really say much more than that. I really enjoyed Yusuf and he's a hell of a guy and very friendly and open. And it reminded me that maybe I need to do that more often too. So without further delay, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Yusuf Bengwell. Thanks.
Song, but we know it's near the end, so we'll just skip to the next song on our playlist or whatever.
Yeah.
We've become so impatient. It was just like, oh, you know, I want this thing, or I don't want to deal with this right now because I know how it ends, or I think I know how it ends. So we just kind of jettison to the next thing.
Everything just kind of becomes or predictable in a way, or we think that it's predictable, and we don't see through the end because we think that we assume that it's going to end a certain way. But if you actually, you know, give that thing, whatever it is, it might be a person, it might be a song, it might be a movie, whatever. If you just give it the time that it needs, you will realize that it has some surprises, it has some twists and turns.
Right. And I think the times where, you know, we've been a little frustrated is our brain is not seeing the ability to be surprised. It's all closed doors. You know, it's like, oh, fuck, man. Oh, fuck him. Fuck her. Fuck me. Everything sucks.
When was the last time you said that to somebody's face?
Fuck you?
Yeah. I did it just a couple days ago. That's why, you know.
Stranger or somebody you know?
Stranger. I was on my bicycle. I passed by a guy, and he had complete right to be upset with me because I was on my phone while biking at the same time. I had like 10 different things I need to do that day, which is by no means is a proper excuse. And he made some snide remark as I passed him, and this, you know, animalistic rage just like came out through me, something that I've never ever experienced before. And I just started yelling, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Just in the middle of Avenue B in broad daylight, children are, you know, just leaving school, and everybody's looking at me like, who the fuck is this weirdo? And I just had this weird moment where I was like, what the fuck am I turning into? Like, I should go back and apologize. I try to turn back and find the guy. I want to say sorry to him, but, you know, I guess he kind of got, you know, spooked out and probably hid inside of a building.
Were you riding away saying the fuck yous?
I was riding away.
So it was like an echo. It was like a fade out.
Yeah, exactly. Then I tried turning around, but then he was gone. So, you know, I don't know. It's weird like that. You know, moments of rage like that just coming out. I mean,
but you're human. I mean, it happens.
Well, the thing is that this kind of stuff doesn't happen to me too often. So it kind of surprises me as to, you know, makes me wonder if there's some thing that I need to deal with inside of me that I'm kind of unknowingly avoiding or something. But anyways, you know, I mean, I might be in a morose mood, but we certainly don't need to make this a morose, you know, conversation. So you're going to have to be the beacon of light.
Okay. Let's get back to that original word. Yeah. So I brought up drugs.
Drugs, man. I mean, every now and then, you know, I'll take an antidepressant or two just to kind of, you know, calm my nerves down. But as far as like, you know, psychedelics go, I mean, I'm kind of over it, man. I really am. I went through my phase in high school where I just, you know, smoked a lot of pot and did acid and ecstasy and whatnot. But I kind of feel like those days are behind me, and I'm too uptight and anxious of a person these days to be able to conduct myself properly under the influence of those psychedelics. But ironically, you know, I maybe 3 months ago, I started smoking pot again, and something happened. Like from after I turned 18, like marijuana just started not working for me. It made me so goddamn paranoid. Every time I took a puff, I thought, you know, the SWAT team was going to be breaking through my door and, you know, handcuffing me or something. And now I'm just like, okay, this is all right. This is actually kind of cool. In a way, I think I kind of give a less fuck about things. So that's why I can kind of sit back and enjoy marijuana. Whereas before, I couldn't be comfortable. But you know, you're a very calm natured guy. So,
circling back to your bike incident. Yeah. So I'm doing the Sober October. I'm not, drinking or doing anything this month. Thankfully it's near the end.
Is it working out for you?
Well, here's the thing. Like,
Do you feel smarter?
No, I'm a little more uptight, but here's the thing. I don't have any addiction or compulsion. Like, I'm not like, I don't have the shakes. I'm not doing double takes when I go buy a liquor store or anything like that.
You don't have any kind of vice? You're not even like a sex addict or anything?
Well, I mean, I like drinking. I like smoking. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, okay, so not doing it, it makes you, so any kind of like negative thoughts you have, they do tend to like circle in your brain. So it's like, okay, well, how do you take the edge off? I'm not saying that, you know, if you have problems, like, you know, start drinking like Jim Beam or anything, but I can see how that takes the edge off and mm-hmm. not having whatever it is, whether it's, you know, drinking or smoking pot or whatever, not having that, you're confronted with that thing that is bothering you. And so sometimes that note can seem a little repetitive because I think by nature we're all problem solvers. So if it's something that's bothering you, it just kind of nags at you. You want to solve, okay, let's get rid of it. But without, you know,
problem solvers, I'd like that.
Without vodka, like, or whatever it is.
Reminds me of my grandma sitting on her couch, you know, chain smoking cigarettes and doing her, you know, crossword puzzles. Because I guess, I don't know, we do have that innate desire to solve things, like you said. That kind of makes sense. You know, I don't know why I just remembered my grandma when you mentioned that, but, you know, it just came up. But, yeah, you might be right. For me, when it comes to, things become habit, too. You know, when you're drinking, smoking, and it's hard to break away from habits. As for me, the first 5 days are hell. But after the 5 days, if I've gone 5 days without, smoking, drinking, or whatever, I'm okay. You know, I just got to get over that 5 day hump, that's the difficult part. And then I'm pretty good about, you know, staying sober until, you know, I slip again, which happens to the best of us, I think. So,
you know, how do you confront, speaking of, dealing with problems, mm-hmm. what are ways that you, deal with things that are bothering you? You just said that things are bothering you.
You know, it's interesting because, there aren't too many things that I can say that I'm 100% proud of myself for, but one thing that I do realize within me is my resilience. You know, I kind of had a tough couple of months with, you know, getting evicted out of my apartment, finding out my, you know, girlfriend's taking off her clothes in exchange of money, and I had so much going on, and there was no way that I could just pass up on all the good stuff that was happening to me and succumb to the bad, succumb to the misfortunes that were happening around me. So I just kind of, you know, thrusted my chest and just started running through the bullshit, all the shit that was being thrown my way. And now that I've finally crossed the finishing line, I'm kind of at this point where I'm just like so enervated, like so energyless. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that, you know, when things go bad, I have the ability to just kind of suck it up and just kind of like plow through the obstacles. But once I reach the finishing line, I just collapse, you know, which is kind of where I'm at right now. And that's like a natural human reaction too, I think. You know, I think I'm in my process of healing right now and just kind of, you know, resting. So hence the reason why I feel like I'm like a talking corpse right now. Yeah. So
how does it feel to be a talking corpse?
I don't know. I mean, it feels good that, you know, I have a, you know, kind, understanding friend that I could just openly talk with without having to, you know, be self-conscious about what I have to say or how I have to conduct myself. So that's nice. But at the same time, it kind of makes me wonder, like, dude, just shut the fuck up, man. Just be quiet for a little while. Don't talk. But this is okay for now. You know, we can do this for another hour.
But don't you think that's ironic, considering that, I mean, you host a podcast about it?
I do. Yeah. Maybe I'll have to go a month where I abstain from talking to people so that I can get my passion and my zeal back.
It's all Siri. Yeah. Siri's voice.
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know. You know, it's weird because I mentioned to you the last time that I saw you that I started working with Barry Electric, interviewing bands from their musical roster. And a couple days ago, this guy named Handsome Dick Manitoba from the Dictators came on here. He also played for MC5, which I'm sure you kick out the jams, motherfucker. I mean, he sang for the MC5 when the original lead singer died. So, you know, he's kind of a big deal. So here he is in my apartment, and the same guy that my punk rocker friends used to call me as my nickname in high school because I had a big old afro like he did back in the day. They used to call me Handsome Dick Manitoba. And this guy that clearly had some sort of influence on my life is in my apartment right in front of me talking to me.
Right here.
Yeah, right here. And I was just so fucking out of it. When I mean out of it, I'm just like just so disengaged. Mm. You know, just uninterested.
Between you, me and you and whoever's listening, you could tell?
Do you think that he could tell?
Yeah.
No, well, maybe it was kind of an odd conversation. He was actually going through some tough shit himself, and I can openly talk about it because, you know, it's on record that he, I guess, found out that his wife of 17 years had been cheating on him. So I kind of could relate with his situation. His son found the text message. The text message said something along the lines of, "I am your god. You are my sex slave." And then there were some photos. Like,
this is odd for the nanny to be telling you.
So, which made me wonder, like, if you were a 14-year-old kid and you found that your mom was, you know, sending naked messages of herself to another person, would you also go and tell dad about it?
I don't know.
It's kind of an odd situation, right?
How does he have access to the phone?
I mean, they live in the same house.
But if it's an iPhone, you got to type in the code.
Not everybody has a code. My girlfriend doesn't have a code.
What, it just appears?
It just appears, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
Well, that's what you get.
Yeah, that's what you get, right. Which is ironic because, I mean, if you're doing some salacious shit like that, you would think that you would take the precaution of putting a passcode on your phone so that nobody would find out about it. But maybe it's that element of danger. Oh, maybe I'll get caught. That people kind of but that's stupid,
yeah,
right?
I think it's the other. I think it's the fact that you're. It's more of just you're just sloppy. Mm-hmm. You're just careless. You're emotionally careless, and so you're that kind of bleeds into other facets.
Have you ever been cheated on?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. 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 You say like you have a diploma in it. Like yeah, I got a PhD and an MD.
It was definitely life changing. I think people need to. Everybody needs to dump somebody and get dumped in their lives.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to learn.
Yeah, that's true, but I think getting cheated on is just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just sober. I just think it's unfair.
Oh, of course. Yes. To this, even now, it's intolerable to me.
Did you walk in on them?
No. Okay, so in the Cliff Notes version, my girlfriend and I were going to move out to LA. She moved out there first. And so when I wrote out the lease in New York, and then when I went out there, pretty early on getting there, she told me that she was with this other guy. But she and I should still like occupy the apartment. So I was like, fuck this. I mean, I was in such a
rage.
No, more of a haze, because I said, okay, it's time to leave. I went to a barista in a coffee shop and I said, can I throw my shit into your apartment and sleep on your couch? A barista, she just makes like coffee for me in the mornings, and so she was like, okay. Well, okay. That's how I was so fucked up. That I was just like, either you say yes or you say no. I don't give a fuck. That's how, I mean, I would never do that under normal circumstances for various reasons.
But like you said, when you're in that haze, it's like you do stuff that kind of goes against character, because in the moment, it's just, it's like nothing really quite makes sense. So everything just comes out.
Right. And then it takes a while for you to really recalibrate the things that you think. It's like when your heart is broken, it's like cracked ribs. You think you're okay. You look okay. Mm-hmm. But inside, it's all fucked up.
Yeah.
So you go out and you're like dating, or you're meeting people, or you just even just like hanging out.
Yeah.
And you just feel like, yeah, am I okay? Because you have that voice in your head, right? Because only you know. Mm-hmm. I guess everything's cool. Everything's cool.
I guess just the fact that you're trying to push yourself out of your comfort zone and still go out and do things, you know, go on dates, see friends. That's kind of a testament to.
Well, it's kind of like what we were saying before. You don't want to, nobody, it's not our nature to be uncomfortable. So it's like, I'm fine. I really am fine. Mm-hmm. Let me out. Let turn me loose. Mm-hmm. And then the world is saying, you're not fine. Yeah. You don't want to listen to that voice. You just want to get drunk and get happy.
That reminds me of the story of 4 years ago. You know, I fell insanely in love with this coworker of mine. She was this girl named Shelly, this amazing, amazing Bulgarian folk singer, and who I actually just reached out for the first time in 4 years, just a month ago. I tried to get her on Murmur for her to be the last guest at the studio. Yeah, at the original Murmur studio.
No, she looks like her.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's the one. That. Right. The girl that's on my Sade poster. And, you know, it was just one of those things where, I guess not unlike how you felt when you walked up to the barista and you were like, hey, you know, whatever. If you say no, if you say it doesn't fucking
matter. I was a little more sincere than that. Yeah. You know? Just a little.
And, you know, she sent me back an email saying, wow, you know, how amazing that you would reach out to me after all these years. I'm going to have to decline. But she said, it's amazing how in life we can unknowingly influence people. And so she said, so thank you for, you know, doing your podcast, and, you know, I support you in your artistic endeavors and this and that. But anyways, that's not the story that I want to tell. The story that I want to tell was on my last day of work 4 years ago, I did something which, even just thinking about it right now, gives me the creeps. Or maybe the creeps in the right way. But, you know, it was just so corny and so cheesy. But in that haze, that was like the only thing that made sense to me, which was to give her a love note and walk out of my job. and I remember, you know, immediately taking the subway to Bushwick, you know, just crying my fucking eyes out on the train because I was just a fucking wreck. And then I went to this bar and I made another copy of this, you know, poem or whatever that I wrote for it. And it's fucking disgusting. Like, you know, just so bad. Anyways, and I was just reading it and I couldn't gauge whether it was proper for me to have done something like that, to give her that note. So I saw this group full of hipsters and I just walked up to them. I was like, I'm really sorry to bother you guys, but I'm really not feeling too well. Can I just tell you my situation? And they all looked at me like, okay. So immediately I knew.
And then this years later, you passed him on your bike and he's like, fuck you, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And immediately, like, I knew this wasn't going to be the crowd that was going to be receptive to my heartache. But regardless, I just told them, I gave this girl this note. Can you please read it and tell me if I did the right thing or the wrong thing? And so the girl just, like, took it out of my hand very slowly. She read it and she put her hand over her mouth and just started laughing. She didn't know what to say to me. And then the guy sitting next to her looked at it and then kind of perused through the letter. And he got up and he said, buddy, we need to talk. And he pulled me aside and he said, you're not feeling well. He said, you're not well. Like, no, you got to understand, no proper person in a sane state of mind would give a person a letter like this.
Was it like Jeffrey Dahmer love letter or something?
And in that moment, it was almost like getting slapped by the hand of God. You know, like suddenly I just like sobered up. I was just like, whoa, you know, okay. All right. So I got some work that I need to do. Anyways, for some reason, your story with the barista reminded me of that moment where you're just like, you know, You know, you're in the haze. It's like you don't know what the fuck you're doing. You're just throwing things out there and just seeing what sticks. I don't know if that's a good analogy.
Speaking of embarrassment, I wish this was my own story, but it's not. So my friend went on a date with this guy, and I guess everything went well. On the second date, he made her burned her a CD of like songs.
Yeah.
This isn't like five years ago. This is like last week.
Oh.
So she says, "I'm sorry, I have an AirBook. I don't have any means to. I can't play this."
Yeah.
I was like, "That's it."
Yeah. It's actually kind of romantic. I mean,
he should have swung it around and saying like, "Well, you should come over to my place and I'll play it."
Yeah. Right.
But
right.
he was just like and just shot down.
Why a CD? Was he trying to be original, or does he still think that people listen to CDs?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
See, that in itself is kind of odd. I mean, it could be cute. I mean, depending on how the girl takes it, you know. If I were him, I would have not only given the CD, but I would have also picked up like a $2 CD player from some, you know, pawn shop or whatever. Because that's a little bit more, you know.
But I was thinking about that though. Like, I mean, I was that guy. I would make like. Make CDs for like girls, but what is the equivalent? Like, what can you do? Like, give a girl a flash drive,
or you could just URL them your Spotify playlist, you know, and put a nice little bow tie around it. I guess send a GIF, GIFs. You do the GIF thing. I'm getting into it.
Oh yeah,
I
am. But like that seems like such a different region giving her like. It. A CD that you made with like artwork that you created.
Yeah. I think I'm not sure. I mean, sure. It's nice, but it doesn't happen anymore. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, you got me Oreo cookies. I mean, that made me happy.
Hey.
So, you know, so thank you for that. You know, keep on doing what you're doing. I mean, I guess the best you can do is if the gift feels like something that's right to you, that you're giving it to this person out of the goodness of your heart,
so what would you say to that guy? Didn't go well.
Well, say to the guy that told me that I was fucking insane.
No, the guy who burned the CD.
Oh, who burned the CD?
And it didn't go well. She was like, she said, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, look, you made a good point. You said that he could have turned it around and been like, hey, then come over to my house. You know, we'll pop it on the CD player there and then listen to it. You know, that's so much of what makes relationships interesting, you know, that tug and pull. You need to have a little bit of a friction, you know, and when something bad happens, you have to take it as an opportunity to turn it around and make something good out of it. So I'm trying to think of a, you know, good example that I could tell you. You know, nothing really comes to mind at the moment, though. I'll let you know if I think about it.
Do you still love New York?
Yeah, I do love New York. I mean, I'll always have this place as my anchor. I don't think I'm going to move anytime soon. I do for sure, though. You know, once I start making $1 million after this murmur thing explodes,
you're moving to the Dakota.
Well, I'm for sure going to buy the house that I grew up in Turkey, in the apartment complex that I was raised in. Like every time that I go back to that place, it's almost like stepping into the Garden of Eden. I suddenly feel transported to, you know, to being a kid again, which is amazing. I tried going back there a couple of years ago, and the lady that's currently staying there wouldn't let me in, which was kind of fucking pissed me off.
Why wouldn't she let you in? She was just being a bitch.
You know, and she knew me, you know, I left a note underneath the door. I didn't hear back. And I went back the next day, which was the day before I was to, you know, come back to America. Mind you, I haven't been in this house in like 15 years. And so I rang the buzzer. She opened the door and she's like, "What do you want?" And I said, "Hey, I'm really sorry to bother, but you know, I grew up here, you know, my parents, Sertaç Kip and Orhan Ulgen." And I said, "Is there any way that, you know, I could just come in for a couple of minutes, just take a photo or two, or come back at a better time?" And I'll never forget her response, because she looked at me dead in the eyes and she asked me, she said, "Do you remember what this house used to look like?" And I thought about it. I was like, "Yeah, I do. I do kind of remember it, but I'd like to see it again." And then she goes, well, if you remember it, then trust me, it hasn't changed much. Goodbye. Close the fucking door shut in front of me. And I was just like, Turkish hospitality, my fucking ass. Fuck you, bitch. Fuck you. I mean, here I am, the guy who invites strangers into his house for conversations. And this lady won't let this boy into the house that was this, you know, childhood home.
But she knew you or knew of you.
She knew of me. Yeah.
Hmm. So you think it was personal?
Oh, I talked to some other people in the building, and they said that she has some mental problems. So I think it's just like, you know, an old stubborn lady. I was just at the post office half an hour ago, and there was a lady just, you know, yelling profanities at everybody, which was so sad because, you know, I was trying to compliment on her beautiful eyes, and she just kind of went on a tirade against me. And
wait, this just happened?
Like half an hour ago, yeah.
You went up to an elderly woman and complimented her eyes.
She was clearly in a really, really bad mood, turning around, and like anybody that was looking at her, she was saying something bad to. Like there was this, you know, really nice gentleman guy that she turned around to and made a comment about how he looked like a crackhead. No, he didn't. He took it so nice. He was so polite about it.
She was looking for a fight.
And then she turned to me and looked at me with these like super fierce eyes. I said, "My lady,
you look like an asshole."
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, "My lady, you have such beautiful eyes. How could such hatred come out through a beautiful person like you?" And you know, I don't know. I guess like when people go, you know, get old, sometimes they go a little cuckoo. So yeah. I hope you don't end up like
I'm saying.
That.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
like, just lose it.
Yeah. So I should have probably videotaped it to, you know, remind myself of what I don't want to be like when I grow up.
Did she like slingshot and like direct her anger to somebody else?
She did. Yeah. Constantly. It was like one after the other. It was like you could hear a pin drop in that post office. Yeah.
That's
aggressive.
Yeah. It's unfortunate.
She's got a lot of anger in her.
But I think all of us are only a few degrees away from that.
Yeah.
Have you like, ever, like you, like you're on your bicycle. Yeah, you yeah, told yeah. this and guy I, to
just fuck,
suck
fuck,
your
fuck,
dick
fuck.
Or go to hell or yeah. whatever. Right. I mean, out of context, he's probably, wouldn't he? What if he was at the post office right after you and he was like, what a fucking day I've been having.
Yeah.
He's going to lump you with her.
I suppose.
So we're only, like I said, we're only a few degrees away from that. And that is something that's very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. You know, what if we have that bad day, you know, that accumulation?
Have you ever done something that made the other person in the room scared of, you know, of you? Like, do they think that, wow, like I don't feel comfortable being in the room with this guy right now?
I don't think so.
Good.
Thankfully, I've always avoided the creep or anything like that. I've always avoided that. So that's,
yeah.
It's always good.
Gotcha. I must have done something at least one time where I just like completely freaked somebody out. Not just like a momentary kind of burst of anger or something. But it must have happened so long ago that I can't recall it right now. So that's kind of a good sign. Or maybe right. I deliberately erase it from memory.
Do you find that the things that you find interesting and the way you speak and the things that you're into, do you find that it is sometimes difficult to relate to like guys?
Guy guys, like macho dudes?
Who?
Like macho guys?
Yeah, I was gonna say like alpha guys.
Alpha guys? No. If anything, I really like alpha guys because you know, it enables me to express a side of me that I wouldn't be able to express maybe around my, you know, more sensitive guy friends. emo guy friends. I don't know how else to put it. You know. Sometimes I like being a meathead, you know. I like getting hammered and talk about bitches and hoes, you know. I mean, every guy has that in him. So any opportunity I can get where I can talk about bitches and hoes.
All right, I know what we're doing. Yeah,
maybe that's why I'm so upset right now. Maybe I need more, you know, alpha guys, friends.
Some drinks.
But it has to be a special brand of alpha guy friends. Alpha guy friends that don't want to talk about football because I don't like football.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Well, that's a thing too. Like, that's like a default, right? Like a lot of Like, you don't know a guy. Like, a guy's like...
Is that how it works? Because, I mean, you like football, right? You're in football.
Yeah, so, like, that's the thing. Like, I... So, in the times that I've been, like, a waiter or a bartender, some guy will say, like, I'm from Atlanta. And, like, so we'll just kind of, like, a default, and we'll talk about, like, the sports and that. You know, but... And so we all know that it's a compromise, but they're into it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, look, I'll probably never see you again, so who cares?
I never knew that. That's
how But what I've always wondered, and I have guy friends that are not into sports, and I find that for them it can be challenging meeting like new people in professional environments that are not. I'm talking to like, you know, like blue collar guy, like blue collar or corporate guys. I don't mean like artists or anything.
They all talk about sports.
Oh, yeah?
I think so, don't they? Or correct me if I'm wrong.
Depends.
Yeah. I guess everybody's different, you know?
Yeah, so I'm really into sports, but I find that, like, it's a crutch. So it's like talking about the weather or...
It feels like the easy way out, almost.
It's like when you go to a party and somebody, like, approaches you and, like, where do you live? What do you do?
Yeah.
I'm just like, I start making shit up.
Yeah, like, really?
I work for NASA.
No shit. You do that?
Yeah, I just get so bored of that.
Really?
I try so I'll talk about anything. You know what I'll do? I say like, "Hey, what are you into? Like what how was your week? What do you got going on?"
So, okay, how do you distinguish between that question and somebody asking you what you do? I mean, I guess in my head, they both kind of fall into this similar category.
What do you got going on?
What do you do, you know? But for you,
So it's more open-ended. They can answer that any way they want. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not... Because, like, what do you do and where you live? I feel like you're trying to put me in a box just so you can have this conversation.
Okay, but when you ask somebody, how's your weekend? Okay, I guess I kind of see what you mean.
Right. Well, what I actually do sometimes is, like, so, like... You're like, what are some new things you got going on, or what fascinates you? And a lot of times people, like, roll their eyes, like, who's this dipshit?
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of funny how that works out. The more you're interested and curious about finding out about another person, the more weirded out they get.
Yeah.
Because they're like, what's the catch here? Like, what's the deal?
Well, I think because we're so conditioned to be insincere. And so when somebody approaches you like that, it's like the panhandler on the subway. Dude, just go away from me.
Yeah.
And so then we kind of revert back to these kind of silly kind of baseline questions of, you know, what part of Brooklyn do you live in or whatever.
It's kind of funny when you take into consideration how awkward everybody feels at a party. When you're growing up watching movies like American Pie, and you see those, you know, college guys just like guzzling Bud Light and like, yeah, you know. And then you think that that's going to be every party you're going to attend, you know, for the rest of your life when you turn 21, and it's totally not the case.
It's everybody in one corner,
yeah,
and you're not occupying the whole space. You're like, what the fuck's going on?
So, do you come here often? You know, those kind of cliche questions, you know, go around.
So, I remember I had to do a catering party for these like Duke alumni in like Central Park South. So, and they had.
I'm just gonna smoke, get a puff, by the way.
Keep talking. And so, you know, everybody went to Duke University, and it's like, so you had half people who they didn't want anything to do with me, which is fine. I'm just, you know, I'm there working. And other half people are like,
do you have a lighter?
No.
Go on.
And so the other half were like trying to talk to me about Duke shit. I'm like, look at me. I'm fucking working here. Do you think I went to Duke or give a shit about Duke?
You could pretend.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what I ultimately did. I think anytime you're in a service job environment, you just kind of nod your head and go, yeah, right on, man. That's, yeah, what you said.
Keep in mind, can you just tell them what I'm doing right now, why I'm not responding?
Yeah, no, he's vigorously masturbating, so I have to hold down the fort, and I'm putting over a little curtain lampshade here.
Oh, my God.
I wish this was a Smellorama episode. You know, you would this would be quite the festive one.
Looks like my friend Nadir just rolled me the worst joint because this thing does not want to light up.
Are you? Oh, I was gonna say, like, you.
This thing's broken. I'm so sorry. I'm just gonna put this out. That was hands down the worst decision of my life.
So, what's the story of the broken guitar?
What is this? Oh, no wonder. Oh no, this is the cookie. I thought this was the weed for a second.
I think I already. Well, there's one way to find out.
The story behind the broken guitar is that I picked that up on my journey hitchhiking from village to village in Turkey, and it was being sold by a street panhandler for five liras, which is probably for about $1.50 in, you know, American money. I just liked it a lot because it looks like something Robert Johnson would play on.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's got that kind of.
Was it in that shape when you found it?
No, I broke it. Oh. Yeah, it fell a couple of times.
But you doing like a Pete Townsend?
Pete Townsend. Oh, yeah, I'm not that rigorous. It's funny, you know, whenever I pick up a guitar, I can never play as aggressively as some of my favorite rock and rollers. I'm always like a really quiet, like a finger picker type of guy. Like, it's never in my nature to just go like thrusting. So-
Do you have a favorite? I know, like, speaking of music, who's the, like, one of, or at least some of your favorite artists?
Oh, okay. So we'll keep this really short because this is probably the part of the conversation where people will tune out if we talk about this for more than 3 minutes. I don't know. I just think that, well, I kind of have a little bit of esoteric taste when it comes to music, and I don't want to have
okay.
Yeah, I don't want to, like, scare people, but it was probably a guy named Bert Jansch that made me want to pick up the guitar. And, you know, Neil Young actually called him the Jimi Hendrix of acoustic guitar at some point. So he's not like some complete unknown dude. But, you know, when you listen to his recordings, I mean, his finger picking rhythms are so intricate that it sounds like as though there are three guitars being played, but it's just one guitar, you know? So I thought that was always really, really cool, you know, to give the illusion to the listeners that it's like, you know, multiple instruments when really in truth it's just one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a magic trick.
So you've seen a ton of shows, right, in New York?
Yeah, yeah. I actually just went to a concert last night. Queens of the Stone Age were playing at Madison Square Garden.
Oh.
I stood outside for about a good 25 minutes trying to score a cheap ticket. And, you know, got two tickets for $35, which I thought was kind of a good deal, considering the tickets were, you know, $75 each. So I make deals with people on the street. That's my thing. I never pay face value for tickets.
How do you know if you're getting actual tickets?
Because they give you the physical ticket. If it's like those.
So what's their story? They bought the ticket. They've gone all the way to the venue and they just said, "Oh fuck it, changed my mind."
Here's how it works, man. People buy concert tickets like 9 months ahead of time, thinking, "Oh, once the day comes, you know, me and my girlfriend will see it, see the show." And then a week before the concert, excuse me, they'll break up and they have like a spare ticket and they don't know what to do with it. I mean,
so you're going on social media looking at all the posts that like people broke up.
No,
you're like, oh, right, you get some tickets.
I just show up in person and I just start yelling, "Who has an extra ticket? Who has an extra ticket?" And people will come up to me and, you know, I got to see David Gilmour for free because some kid was just like, "Yeah, my friend couldn't make it. So here you go. Have fun." It was a $100 ticket.
Wow.
Yeah. So you get lucky like that, you know. And plus, I think it's just like completely unfair that, you know, in this day and age, it costs $100 to see your favorite band.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't cost that much. You know, that's ridiculous.
Well, that's a thing that I've been really confused about. So the music industry is taking a nosedive and all these artists on the nobody's pushing units or anything like that. But people are still going to see live music. And so you've got people like Roger Waters and Paul McCartney, mm-hmm. you know, we both went and saw, and they're like pushing 80. So like, what's the touring scene going to look like 30 years from now? Are we going to have like Blink 182, like reunion and like, but they can't do City Field or they can't do.
Oh, they were going to do City Field. They were going to do City Field with Linkin Park before the guy killed himself.
Well, okay. So that's my next thing. They're going to have to like bunch them up. You know, they'll probably have to do like Avril Lavigne and like four other acts and like do
a music festival for like the year 2002, yeah, whatever was on the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the thing that I think about a lot. And, you know, these arenas, I'm sure they're forecasting and they're going to know. I mean, they can't, like, AC/DC can't tour forever.
Well, that's a good point because, you know, during those times, everybody listened to the same music. You know, collectively, society was attuned to the same type of music in the 60s and 70s. Everybody listened to Pink Floyd. Everybody listened to Led Zeppelin. Whereas today, unfortunately, there is not a unifying sound in modern music. Everybody has, like, their own little niche, you know? Like, you go on the street, you ask some guy, what are you into? He'll tell you, you know, I'm into Bulgarian folk music. The next guy will say he's in the jazz. The next person will say he likes death metal. And it's not like, unfortunately, there isn't, like, a band or bands nowadays that, like, bring everybody together. In my opinion, you know, maybe I'm a little biased because I love Radiohead so much, but I think that Radiohead is actually one of those bands that do bring people from different musical backgrounds together, you know, because their music, I find it to be very, you know, eclectic and diverse, but you might disagree with that.
No, I love Radiohead. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, they're at this point, they're kind of like the older type of band. I'm not talking about like Radiohead or Metallica.
Yeah, they're saying like more like 2000s and 2010s. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, like what's exactly? So yeah,
it's hard. Maybe it's going to disappear. Maybe arenas won't be in existence in 20 years time because, you know, bands will only be big enough to play theaters. I don't know. That's a stupid, you know, thought, but I don't know.
But do you have a concert that stands out for you that you're like, holy shit?
So many. I mean, I guess like right off the top of my head, I mean, I'm seeing that Metallica poster from Webster Hall.
When was this?
That was exactly a year ago, last year, September.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. It was like a $20 concert ticket. Yeah. I ended up just without knowing, end up talking to the assistant of Metallica's manager. And he just pulled out a ticket right out of his jacket. And he said, here you go, kid. Have a good time. Don't tell anybody I gave you this.
Wow, how close were you?
Oh, I was like fucking front row. It's Webster Hall. It's like a 900 capacity club, you know? So it's very cool. You know, to go from seeing them in a, you know, football stadium in Turkey to, you know, some shitty nightclub.
So what's the difference?
The difference?
From going to like a stadium.
I don't know. You know, I'm kind of one of those weird guys. I in a way, I actually kind of like going to stadium concerts because, you know, more so than the music or the band that I'm seeing, I'm more curious about the energy in the air. You know, I remember especially like for David Gilmour, as I just mentioned, who I saw about a year ago. I mean, the concert itself was phenomenal. It was just superb, but there was something in the air in the crowd that night.
Where did he play?
That was just like Madison Square Garden. Yeah. That was just, it was like magical, you know? And, you know, it's just cool. I'm into that energy, you know, just a big mass of people coming together, being unified because they all have this one thing that they all like so much.
Yeah.
I think that's really powerful. You know, I mean, even if it's for a fucking Bon Jovi concert, I mean, it's you know, it's really, it's powerful, you know, it's profound. I don't know. Do you agree with that or do you disagree?
Yeah. I mean, I think you articulated better than what was rolling around in my brain. But yeah, I mean, I think that's why we go to see live shows.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, we could listen to the music by ourselves and nobody certainly likes, you know, the mass exodus gridlock of leaving a concert venue.
No.
But I think we all put up with it for those reasons, because you want to experience something.
Sure. Or you get suckered into thinking it's going to be an experience and then you show up to the actual music festival and you're like, this fucking sucks. It's fucking hot. I'm hungry. I want to go home. Or, you know, I'm kind of over festivals. You know, I've done my share.
The last festival I went to was the one that Radiohead did for...
All Points West?
It was here, but it was like years and years ago.
It was like an island, right? It was on an island. Right.
Well, it's that space that's like between Manhattan and Queens. Randall's.
I think it was called All Points West Festival.
Okay, maybe. We had to get on a boat to get there.
Yeah. Was it during the In Rainbows kind of time era? Do you remember?
Something like that? Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I remember, like, the lines to go to, like, the porta potties were, like, I'm just going to piss myself. I don't give a fuck. And, like, the Roots were on another stage, and, yeah, me too. I was like, okay, this was awesome. This is, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
They were awesome. Good.
We had a good time. Is there anything that you regret from that year, 2008?
I can't think of anything that I regret in particular.
That's good.
Yeah. You have a favorite album from Radiohead?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like all of their stuff. But I remember in second grade, I saw the music video for Paranoid Android. When I was in Turkey, and this was like right around the time period when my parents had just gotten a divorce. And I remember being so obsessed, not so much by the song, but by the music video, because it's like kind of animated. And mm-hmm. Have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
The music video for Android? And then I remember about a month and a half later when I first visited my dad in his new apartment after him and my mom got a divorce. The moment that I walked in, he had OK Computer cranking out.
Your dad?
The speakers. Yeah, yeah. And then when Paranoid Android came out, I remember thinking like, oh, this is the song. This is the, song that has that music video that I really, really like. And then, funnily enough, 5 years later, I saw the same music video again. I'm like, oh, so this was the band. I was like 13 at the time. So I bought the CD and just like end up being completely obsessed with them ever since. So yeah, definitely OK Computer, because I used to listen to that album a lot with my dad. Yeah.
My, I don't know if I told you the story. That hotel on the side of Bryant Park?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my friend was working there, and they were staying there when they were playing Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow.
And he was just like gushing. He was like, oh, my God, I want to talk to them. So they all came down. He was finishing his shift, and they were like, what the hell are you? What are you guys doing? He's like, oh, we're just going to go. We're going to play. They were going to walk to MSG.
Yeah.
They were like, what?
Yeah.
Are you just going to walk there? Yeah. They're like, yeah. I mean, like, our shit's over there. It's like, wow. I mean, can I walk with you? And they're like, yeah. He walked with them. Oh. And he was like, oh, you don't want to go down fifth. Let's go down, six or seven.
When was this?
This was, I guess around
2003 or something?
Maybe.
Oh, that's crazy.
And they're like, so when they were going to part ways, and he was like, this is an awesome store. And they're like, well, what are you doing? You want to see the show? He was like, yes. So yeah, he hung out with them.
What the fuck, man?
And I'm just like, I think about like whenever I'm in that Bryant Park area, I'm just thinking like, what band just decides to walk to Madison Square Garden?
Props to them, man. I have the craziest Radiohead story that I got to meet them about a year ago. I don't know how it happened, but I was riding my bicycle on Bowery. And I always know at the Bowery Hotel, they have everybody you can imagine staying there. And this was like 2 days before their concert. So I thought, you know what, let me just like pass by to see. Maybe they're staying there. And then surely enough, right outside at Gemma, the restaurant of Bowery Hotel, I see fucking Ed O'Brien, the guitar mm-hmm. player. He's like my favorite member of Radiohead. I love him to death because he's like the guy who's like incorporating the those ethereal kind of soundscapes, that are like really atmospheric. He's like the guy that's adding the sonic flourishes to the songs, not so much the melody, but the atmosphere creator. And there he is, just like having lunch or dinner or whatever. And I stood around and he came up and we talked. He was so nice. And a couple days later, after they played their Madison Square Garden show, a friend of mine messages me and says, look, the band is having their after party at Acme. If you want to come in,
Wait, the Acme Bar?
Acme Bar, yeah, in Soho. He said, if you want to come.
Oh, I was thinking the Acme near St. Mark's.
Yeah. Oh, is there another one over there?
I thought, yeah.
Maybe.
Okay, it doesn't matter.
The one that I know is in Soho, but me being like the crazy fanboy Radiohead fan that I am, I ran back home. I grabbed my Hail to the Thief poster from 2003. The first concert I've ever been to, by the way, my mother drove me 3 states to take me to the show and like completely changed my life.
Was she into them or she's doing
Oh, yeah. I've seen Radio with my mom like 5 times. She loves them too. So it's a family affair.
Yeah, your mom's a kind of a music head, huh?
I'm gonna say she's a cool woman. Let's just put it that way. She's not like, you know, a music aficionado, but you know, she's into the things that I like. So anyways, you know, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. Here I am, you know, standing right next to Michael Stipe and Edward Norton, you know, right outside. They're smoking cigarettes, talking about architecture. And I'm just thinking like, gee, I sure wish I knew something about architecture so I could jump buildings. In on this conversation. Yeah. And then their manager comes out and, you know, I'm obviously the only fan there, right? Because everybody else is like their celebrity friends. And he's like, look, kid, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. The band wants to be left alone. But Tom's going to come out. Tom York's going to come out in a second. He's going to sign your poster for you. But after that, you have to go, right? So I'm like, yes, sir. You know, totally, no problem. So 2 minutes later, you know, lo and behold, Tom York comes walking out with his new bombshell Italian girlfriend.
I was going to say.
And I'm just, you know, this is the guy whose music that saved me on so many occasions. And he's right there. Like, how you're close to me right now. And like a fucking loser, I couldn't talk. I rolled out my poster. I'm like,
well, you're like, big fan.
I was just like, I just rolled out my poster and I tried to give him my Sharpie. And he did one of those things. He did this thing I'll never ever forget. He looked down and up. He kind of like checked me out. He's like, no. And he just started walking away. I'm like, wow. But at the same time, you know, I knew doing this that he's kind of a moody guy. You know, it's a 50-50 chance whether I'll get an autograph or not. Even the bodyguard turned around to me and was like, sorry, kid. Like, you know, I wish I could do something about it, but that's just the way he is. So there are these two, like, girls yelling behind him. They're like, well, if you're such a big fan, why don't you go run after him? Like, make him sign it for you. I'm like, you know, I can't do that. Like, I respect this guy.
Why did you tackle him?
Yeah, exactly. I can't do that.
Well, so, who were they? They were just passing by?
No, they were girls at the party, like models, you know, probably, you know, there to whatever. So I start walking back home, you know, I'm like super despondent. I have my poster underneath my arm. I'm just like, you know, yeah, really gloomy. Like,
I get the Charlie Brown theme playing.
Yeah, exactly. And I reach 2nd Avenue. I'll never forget 2nd Avenue in the corner of 6th Street. And boom, we run into each other again. I think they were just taking a long route to go to the hotel as to avoid the paparazzi.
Oh.
So it's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's me, Tom York, his girlfriend, and his bodyguard. Just the 4 of us. I'm just like, again, I fucking
lost. Remember me? Oh, yeah.
I'm like, Mr. York, please. And he's like, ugh, all right. So Tom York comes walking up to me, grabs the Sharpie out of my hand, and he's about to put his autograph. And he goes, nope, not going to do it. Not going to do it. And hands the Sharpie back to you. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And I turn around. There's a horde of fucking paparazzi running towards us. He saw them. And the moment he saw them, he just completely went into his I'm not giving any autographs to anybody mode. And I kind of understood in that moment why he didn't sign my poster. Because, you know, I got to witness the names, the things that these paparazzi people were calling him as to accost him for an autograph. You know, they were telling him like, oh, we've been waiting outside your hotel all day. You know, why don't you take the time to, you know, sign our posters? You don't care about your fans. You always do this. You know, you're an asshole. I'm just like, this is like one of the most respected musicians of, you know, modern day. And he can't walk on the street with his girlfriend without being, you know, being called names. I was just like, yeah, you know, I kind of understand why you didn't give me the autograph. So it was kind of like a bittersweet moment. You know, it was interesting that I had this, you know, moment that I will always remember getting snubbed by Tom York.
Is he tall? He's a short guy.
No,
right?
He's shorter. Yeah. He's shorter. But at the same time, it was also sad to, you know, witness him getting hassled around like that because, you know.
You still have the poster?
I still, yeah. I got it signed by 2 guys, Ed O'Brien and Colin Greenwood. But
you're like, fuck you, man. I'll get some other guys to sign it.
Yeah. So anyways, that's my super long radio and encounter story.
I'm glad you were able
to edit this one out.
I'm glad you were able to find some solace from that. Cause I mean, I was getting a little bitter just hearing that.
Yeah. Like,
oh man, that sucks.
I know. Well, what can he do? You know, I've also had some really cool encounters with other people that I've really admired. So I can't complain. You know, when I came to America, you know, I barely could speak English, you know, so, and I didn't have any friends. So the one thing that I turned to, you know, to make me feel like I belonged somewhere or to make me feel like I had friends was, you know, television and music, you know, like the music videos that I watch or the, you know, watching the TV characters that I so admired on the TV made me feel like I was part of something. So in a way, you know, it's always like really humbling for me when I see the people that, that essentially, you know, saved me as far as I'm concerned, you know. So I'm super, super grateful for that. You know, I don't know, maybe people call it like celebrity obsession or whatever, but for me, it goes like way more than that. You know, have you ever encountered somebody that you really, really admired that may have, you know, saved you as well?
Not to that degree. I think I've shared my Hugh Grant story.
He
really didn't save me.
Yeah.
But
he didn't save you.
No.
He fucking snubbed you. Yeah.
So for, I think I've shared this once before on my show, but, I was doing a catering job and I was smoking weed, as I usually did. And Hugh Grant was at the party and he just automatically assumed that he could get a hit, which I was like, ah, that's fine. And he said, this weed is shit. And I was like, well, fuck you, man. The guy that I was working with, I don't even think he even knew him. He just saw him as like some British dude.
Yeah.
He's like, man, that dude can go fuck himself. And yeah. Like, yeah. Wait till I tell you who he is.
Yeah. That's so funny, man. Yeah. Fuck him. I did something crazy. I don't want to talk about it. It's fucking, you know, I feel like, you know, my life as of late has been filled with so many questionable decisions that it's probably just best for me to just refrain from talking for a while.
Would you like drink Clorox or something?
No. I don't know. I don't want to fucking get into it. I'm already talking so much shit right now.
I feel like you feel like you're in a period of transition. Is that kind of?
Yeah, definitely.
Is that exciting for you or is that more like?
I don't know. I'm just kind of like, let's get it fucking over with. You know, that's kind of what I feel like.
Right. Well, exactly. Yeah. That's kind of like what we were talking about before of like.
I guess the one thing that I'm really happy about right now is that I'm not paying rent. That's like the one thing that makes me happy in life that, you know, I can finally tell people that I have a rent stabilized apartment in New York City. You know, I'm only paying $200 a month for, you know, that closet.
Yeah, the hookup hotel. Right there.
It's kind of cute. Yeah. So, you know.
Really? They don't bat an eye. They're like, okay, let's dive in.
Well, it's only happened once so far. Or I don't know. Yeah, maybe more than once too, but whatever. It's all right, you know. It's all right. It does the trick. Like I said, I mean, it's this goes beyond sex too. I feel like anytime you're in a place where you're limited, where you have limitations, I think enables you to do things that might be a little outside of the box. So I'm kind of all for limitations, if that makes sense.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, like, you know, what do you think is your biggest shortcoming in life right now?
Just being happy, you know, believe it or not, being happy.
Yeah.
Which is a good, you know, segue for me. I know you ask, like, you have those like set questions you ask at the end. So my question, that I ask, and I'll answer the question, but I want to pose it to you as well, is, you know, what is happiness to you right now? Hmm. And it's so, I think anytime you're, you consider yourself thoughtful or introspective, you're going to wrestle with a lot of things, unless you're, you know, a dog and you don't care. You can just chase tennis balls. You're going to reflect on things. There's a part of you that kind of looks backwards and looks forwards And, you know, it's, and, you know, if you listen to the music that we listen to, you're going to be melancholy and you're going to think about things that maybe you shouldn't have. You shouldn't.
Like killing yourself.
Killing yourself, or the concept of like ending it, or jumping off a bridge, or just spending your whole the rest of your
life.
You want
to do it together, alone. Like after this conversation is done with you, want to just go walk over to Manhattan Bridge, and jump together.
Manhattan? I don't know. That's really dreary. We're gonna need some Tom Waits for that one. Manhattan. Nobody's gonna find us if we go over Manhattan.
Yeah.
But
could
for
be,
me,
it could be a New York Post headline: two famous podcasters commit suicide together. It could be like the beginning of our careers, you know, I'm telling our legacy.
Yeah, yeah.
And people will listen to this conversation and say, it's the best podcast episode ever.
But for me, it's like trying to keep that ball afloat. And, you know, I do balance, I try to balance ambition with happiness. And, you know, I think sometimes in my life where I've been super ambitious, I've not been happy. And sometimes where I've been really happy, I've gotten apprehensive of saying, like, why don't you do more shit? So I don't know. I feel like it's a plate that you constantly need to be spinning. And sometimes I don't, I mean, a lot of times I don't do a very good job about with it.
Do you like to spin plates on your free time?
All the time. Yeah. So I pose the question to you. What's happiness to you right now?
I feel very happy when I'm around friends that can make me laugh very boisterously. It doesn't happen too often, but when it does, you know, it gives me that moment of, I guess, I don't know, happiness. The last time that I was happy was when I went to see a 4D movie at the movie theater. And like, you know, have you been to one of those?
No. Where'd you go, to like Alamo Draft House?
No, it was at 14th Street. It's, you know, the like the chairs move around and they spray like shit all over your face. And then sounds when fun. There's like a, you know, a fight scene, like this thing pops out like behind the chair and just like kicks you in the back.
Like what? Like a stapler?
You know,
some guy just goes in the back, just like Usher just smacks in the back of the head.
That's what it feels like. If you see a scene with a lot of rats, you can feel like things crawling.
Dude,
all
what
around.
Was the movie you saw?
Geomancer or Geostorm.
Oh, so they, yeah. So they threw like buckets of water on
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's like fog. There's like fart smells. I mean, you know, it's like odors and...
What theater is it? Is this the 14th. Old... Oh, the 14th, old United yeah. Artists or whatever it is now?
Yeah. So me and my friend Nadir, we got kind of stoned and went to this and we were the only ones laughing like a fucking hour. We almost got escorted.
Do you recommend getting stoned and doing that?
Oh, it was super intense. Super intense. Yeah. It'll make you laugh a lot.
And so the fart smells and the water and popcorn getting thrown in your face and the staplers in your back, that doesn't freak you out if you're high?
I don't know. It made me really kind of happy, actually. It made me feel like I was alive for once.
Did the movie feel really long?
The movie was shit, but the special effects were cool.
I mean, with all the things that are being done to you, did it enhance the...
Oh, the 4D experience? Yeah. Like, I think so, yeah. It made it fun. I mean, I'll recommend it. I mean, look, I'm being slightly, you know, frivolous, obviously. You know, watching a 4D
movie
is not
enough to make me happy. Can you watch any movie in 4D? Can you watch 12 Years a Slave in 4D?
Every time you get whiffed, like, I don't want to imagine what would happen. But, I mean, I think it's only designed for action movies. Yeah. You can't do it for, like, Ingmar Bergman.
You know? No Fellini.
Yeah, no Fellini. So, you know, I mean, I don't know. You seem kind of happy, but you're saying that you're not really happy. So what can we do about that, Vandal? How can we change that?
I don't know if it's something to fix and change, like, immediately. I think it's something...
I have antidepressants I could give you, by the way. I have, like, lots of them.
What are they?
Celexa.
Wow. Yeah. Are they considered an opioid?
I'm not sure. Yeah. When's your birthday?
I passed. It was in the summer.
Okay.
When's yours?
May 2nd.
All right. That's a Taurus?
Yeah, yeah. Second of May. And you're Leo.
Yes. August. This feels like a date.
August 4th?
3rd.
How the fuck did I know that?
Wow. I think the 4th is Obama, I think.
Obama?
I think he's the 4th.
I see. Well, where were you born?
Vietnam.
Okay. Well, he was born in Kenya, so.
Yeah.
I was gonna make a joke, but whatever. Maybe, you know, time differences. Technically, guys, maybe you were also born on the 4th if you had been born in Kenya.
That's true, yeah. Yeah. But we're the same. We're the exact same. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm fucking losing it, man. We better shut this off before I go down
here. Yeah, you got a double stuff already to get into.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say?
Hey, man, keep rocking.
Yeah, keep rocking to you, too. And, you know, hopefully the next time that we get to catch up.
Yeah. Look, listen. You hear that?
Yeah, yeah. It's because it's past 4:30.
Oh, that's right. So he's over with. Yeah. He's done.
Pedro is
randomly hammering things to look busy. The Wookiee is not like wandering.
He had to wait until the end of our podcast to stop. You know,
no, that was nice of him. That's appropriate. He's gonna do his own.
Really?
He's probably gonna get set up and do his in the hall.
Yeah, I'm brain dead. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
This was a lot of fun.
Oh, hey, man. Hey, bro. Yeah.
Did you enjoy the sparkling water?
I'm still enjoying it.
Good. Enjoy.
In present tense.
Yeah. And hey, the brownie hasn't kicked in yet. You said that might have been laced.
Well, we still got a few more minutes. Yeah. All right. Can't buy a thrill. Well, I've been up all night.
Love.